What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. How y'all doing? Everyone have a good weekend. Merry Christmas. Get some presents. Eat some food. And watch some football. That's what we all do over the holidays. Big show coming up. I just hit record. There's about 13 minutes left in this game. Diggs just scored his third touchdown. The Patriots are getting throttled. I mean, I think the score is 37-9. We're just going to record this bad boy. But I have a lot coming up. Some thoughts on the AFC playoff race. Some thoughts on the teams in the NFC that can win the Super Bowl. At least win the NFC. Some thoughts on the Jets and the whole Jacksonville and the draft stuff. The Miami Dolphins benched Tua in the middle of a game. Cliff Kingsbury failed again. Urban Meyer, Dwayne Haskins cut. We'll dive into it all. And, of course, the Middlecoff mailbag, at John Middlecoff. Slide up into my Instagram DMs, and we answer your questions here on the show. For those of you that have, greatly appreciate it. Three and Out Podcast, subscribe to the show, separate from Collins' feed, and leave a review. It helps with the show. Say it over and over. I greatly appreciate it. I saw some people leave some new reviews. Very cool. But let's start with the Monday Night Football game. And let's start on the positive note. The Bills have become a powerhouse. And I talked about it last week that the most important hire you have, you really have three essential hires as an NFL franchise. Because I had someone DM me this last week, and he's like, how can these billionaires that are so successful in other lines of work consistently screw up their football teams? Because I'm like, well, if you have a big-time product or a big-time idea, your hires don't always dictate your success. Maybe you're a marketing genius. Maybe you developed an app. Maybe you developed, you know, like Jimmy Haslam's in the trucking business. The Spanoses were in the real estate business. The Lurys were I think he was in the Hollywood, you know, in the movie business. The Crafts were in the commercial real estate business. You can get by without like one person once you create the idea or the company. It's not going to make or break your company. But if I hire the wrong coach or draft the wrong quarterback, I got no fucking chance. None. I will not win in football. And you could throw the GM in there too, but a lot of times now the coach ultimately is a decision maker. So I got to get my coach right, I got to get my GM right, and I got to get my quarterback right. Those three people will make or break my team, winning and losing. I don't think it's really like that in like big corporations, in multi-million dollar operations, right? You guys all work in different jobs. I know it's probably different now with Corona, but I'm sure you have a lot of like middle management that are worthless. That if it was up to you, guys above you, you're like, I would fire that guy yesterday. He's stealing money. I can't believe how much they're paying Bill. Like, I can't believe that Joe down the hall is making 200 grand. I wouldn't pay that guy 75. He doesn't do anything, right? In football, it doesn't really work that way. Because you're paying a guy, that guy's going to work really hard. He just might stink. He might be Freddie Kitchens. He might be Jim Tom Sula. He might be, you know, a terrible quarterback. You know, Dwayne Haskins. And you're just going to stink if that guy is in a position because those guys dictate your success. But with the Bills, and I talked about this last week, it's on full display. They did a couple things right. I mean, one, they swung for the fences with Josh Allen, and he's become a star. This touchdown that he just threw with like 13 minutes left in the game, first thing that came to my mind was, that's Patrick Mahomes. And then Brian Griese said, did that just look like the Kansas City Chiefs, Lewis? He's made a couple throws on this touchdown drive. One across his body, another one across his body rolling left in the red zone. That it's just, only so many people have that, you know, shot in their bag. Like, there's only a handful of guys, Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes, just thinking off the top of my head, that can do that. Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, those guys couldn't have done that in their dreams in their prime. And those guys, I mean, Brees going to the Hall of Fame, Rivers had a hell of a career. Like, Russell Wilson could not have made that throw. And Russell Wilson is a Hall of Famer. Couldn't have done it. Not, Brady can't, because he can't move like that. Like, what this guy is doing is just incredible. And the other thing is they made a very, very, very bold trade. They traded pick 22 for Stephon Diggs. And I remember last year being at the playoff game, the Niners versus the Minnesota Vikings. And their only touchdown drive that game by Minnesota, they went right down the field. They got a PI call. They got a sweet grab by Diggs, a PI call on Diggs, and a touchdown on Diggs. And it was like, God, this guy is unreal. My buddies in that division with the Bears, they're like, thank God he's out of the division. He has gone to the Buffalo Bills and absolutely eviscerated people. I think he leads the league in catches, leads the league in yards, three more touchdowns. He's kicking everyone's ass. And it was weird because he was a diva or whatever, but he was a winning player, right? Like the thing with Odell, like, can he go to the playoffs with him? The Giants went once and he's just been on losing teams. With Diggs, it was like all those years on the Vikings, they were always good. So it's like, yeah, he had issues with his quarterback or Zimmer or whatever, the management, but you won with him. The game started between the lines. That dude was ready to kick your ass. I want to go to war with Diggs. Then he goes to Buffalo. They're good. It's kicking everyone's butt. So he's a winning football player, and it's been seamless because it was also a move. Like, it was a great wide receiver draft, and Justin Jefferson went in that spot. Who's really good. He ain't Diggs. And the Bills, I don't think they can win the Super Bowl this year, but they're going to be in the Super Bowl conversation the next couple years. They have something special. And it starts with they had a good GM. They clearly have a really good coach. They nailed the quarterback. And all their defense might not be as good. Who gives a shit? As long as you got the coach and the quarterback, it's on like Donkey Kong. And the Bills are for real. They're 12-3. And play the Dolphins, I would expect them to be 13-3. And I think we're all going to agree that they're probably the best competition for the Chiefs. But, like, I did see them play the Chiefs earlier this year and get throttled. So, we'll see. I'll believe it when I see it. But I'm in agreement. They're the second-best team in the AFC. They beat the Steelers. They're just better than all the wild card teams. They're good. But on the flip side is, like, Belichick's team is awful. Cam Newton, he gets up at 4 in the morning. I don't know why. He doesn't drink his coffee till 8. But he's not good. The rest of their team is not good. They had all these opt-outs, and I've spent all this time talking. You get better doing something by doing it. I get better at podcasting by podcasting a lot. You get better at selling by selling a lot. You get better at, if you want to be a cook, by cooking, right? All these opt-out guys, I don't know what the hell they did this year. I talked to a buddy in the league who had an opt-out guy. He's like, I don't know what the guy's been doing all season. You just don't know. So their team's not going to be good next year. Why does Belichick in his late 60s, like, is it time for him to step away? And when I say step away, I don't mean quit coaching, but just let Josh McDaniels coach this team. Let him put his imprint. Let them start over together. Why doesn't Belichick go somewhere else? Now, I don't know if Kraft would let him, but why does Belichick want to be a part of this? He's already done it for 20 years. He's won, you know, 6 Super Bowls, been to 9, all those AFC championships, all those divisions. He's done it. He can't do any more in New England. So I know he doesn't want to, like, put his tail between his legs and just quit, but isn't it time for a breakup? Hasn't it run its course? Why not go to the Chargers, right? And just see what you got. If he is available with the Chargers, I mean, can you imagine Belichick coaching that squad? And let Josh McDaniels just transition to become the head coach. Work with Kraft and definitely Jonathan Kraft, who probably wants Belichick out of there. And just start new. The Patriots can basically hit the reset button like Josh did when he got to Denver and let him put his old stamp on it and let Belichick go somewhere and just try to win for a couple more years. He ain't going to be coaching until he's 90. What's he going to do with this team? Even if you gave him the greatest GM in the world, which Belichick's not, they got a couple-year rebuild. They don't have any quarterback. None. Even if the Niners trade them back Jimmy Garoppolo, who's he throwing it to? N'Keal Harry? Jacoby Myers? Like, Gronkowski, Welker, Edelman, they ain't walking through that door. It's over. Deion Branch, Gronkowski, it's over. I mean, put a bow on it, it's done. The Patriots, it's a wrap. They need to start from scratch and do it over. If I'm Belichick, like, maybe I sit down with, maybe we just go our separate ways. Let Josh do it. Take it over. You groomed the guy. You know, we did it with Bobby Bowden, I think with Jimbo Fisher. They tried to do it with Muschamp in Texas, the coach in waiting. Josh McDaniels has been the coach in waiting for, you know, 7 years. Hell, he turned down the Colts because he was a coach. Just let him take it on. What is the point of Belichick sticking this out? So he could just retire a Patriot? Who even cares? Brady left. No one. We talk about Brady all the time. It's fun seeing him win games. I want to see Belichick on a good team. This team is not good. Now, it's because of Belichick. I mean, every player on the roster is his. He chose, but I don't want to see him on this team anymore. So I'm selfish here. I don't know if this is going to happen. It honestly seems a little unrealistic. But the team is so terrible. Like, I just can't see Belichick. Yeah, just let's come back with the Patriots. It'll be fun. Just win 5 games. They don't have a quarterback. Stidham's awful. Cam can't throw, and he's a free agent. What are they going to do? Who knows? I mean, if they just draft a rookie, what if that guy's not good? To me, Belichick, Chargers, man. I'm telling you, I keep talking about the Chargers. They have Justin Herbert and all these players under contract. Can you imagine if Belichick went there, how good they would be? That'd be, you know, the Chiefs' worst nightmare, see Belichick go to the Chargers. But, man, Patriots stink. Okay, there is a lot going on in the AFC. So I wanted to start with just kind of an overview looking forward of this weekend. We obviously know the Dolphins pulled the game out of their ass against the, I want to call them the Oakland Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders. The Colts blew a game where they were killing the Steelers. A devastating loss. Rivers threw a bad pick. The Titans got worked in the snow by the Green Bay Packers, who were one of the best teams in the league. The Browns lost to the Jets. Now, they didn't have wide receivers, but Baker Mayfield, you're the number one overall pick. Browns fans keep telling me we're going to pick up the fifth-year option. Well, you got to find... I know it's a tough spot. Bad coach game by Stefanski. I think he threw it 53 times. Overall, just a disaster. And then... who am I missing? The Ravens, who I think are the only team... And I hate to say this because the Bengals have been playing well. I mean, the Bengals beat the Steelers last Monday night. They just beat the Texans, kind of took it to them. J.J. Watt, you know, freaked out, lost it. Actually didn't freak out. I love everything J.J. Watt says. He is so right. The fans pay the bills. Never forget that. I never forget that. Too many players, I think, coaches. The league office understands it. I think you see it in other sports. The NBA has a big problem with this. The fans are your cash cow. And I loved it spoke to my heart, J.J. Watt's rant, because I think it's so true. Without the fans, there is no business model. And there is no cash. And there is a lot of cash right now because a lot of people watch the league. And I didn't watch the Houston Texans-Cincinnati Bengal game. Clearly, J.J. Watt was not happy. So here's what I did. I ranked the AFC playoff teams. Not based on scenarios, and because clearly between the Colts and the Titans, one of those teams is a lock. You know, between the Colts right now are on the outside looking in. Miami, Cleveland, and Baltimore, they win, they're in. And assuming Tennessee wins, they would be in as well. So I just ranked them. How I think between the Ravens, the Titans, the Colts, the Browns, and the Dolphins. In a vacuum, the way I look at them. Number one is the Ravens. That Browns game where Lamar might have been taking a poop, might have had cramps, whatever, changed their season. They pull that game off. Their schedule was easy. Win, win. They play the Bengals. They're going to win. The Ravens are going to the playoffs. Now, you know how I feel about them in the playoffs? About Lamar Jackson's limitations throwing the ball, which ultimately is what you have to do to make playoff runs. But I think they're going to get there. And who knows? Maybe he can run around, win you a game. They would not be a team that I would love to play in the playoffs. The second team. I struggled with the Titans and the Colts. I'm going to lean the Titans just because I'm going to lean with the team with the better offense. And the Titans play the Texans this week, who are in absolute shambles. The Titans have an issue, though. Their defense isn't very good. Jadeveon Clowney has been a disastrous signing. He's injured. Their secondary is atrocious. Devontae might be the best wide receiver in the league, but he destroyed them. Rodgers destroyed them. Again, they might be the best offense in the league, but that was in the snow. That was pretty ugly. Though I do think the Titans beat the Texans, that means they will win the division. So I got the Ravens, I got them beating the Bengals, I got them getting the wild card spot. I think the Titans are the second best team in this group. I think they're going to win and they're going to be in. The Colts play the Jags. It's pretty crazy that a team that is on a 14-game losing streak has a win. The Jags won the first game of the season. And that game, if the Browns and the Dolphins and the Ravens win, dropping that game week one against the Jaguars is the reason they're not going to make the playoffs. Phillip Rivers, love the guy, root for the guy, but holy moly does he make some terrible fucking decisions at the end of the game. He's throwing balls up in the fourth quarter through a terrible pick. He threw other balls that could have been picked. Like, Phil, your arm is not that good. Dump it off. Take a profit. Move down the field. You could have won the game. But I still think the Colts have an identity. They can run the ball. Their defense is really good. I think they beat the Jaguars. But still, like, they can't win the division if the Titans win. And then they got to hope one of these other teams lose. And I think the Ravens are winning. And then let's look at the Browns and the Dolphins. Let's start with the Browns. If fully Corona healthy and all the guys are on the field, the Browns are better than the Dolphins. They have dramatically more talent. I don't even think it's close. But as you saw, like, if the game gets put on Baker's back, he can't win. That is not the way he plays. They have a specific way Cleveland plays to win. They throttle you with the run game because they have, you know, a 1-2 punch is probably the best in the league. Nick Chubb's a stud. Kareem Hunt's an incredible backup. But when you got to throw with Baker Mayfield 50-plus times a game, you're going to lose. Whether Jarvis is and Odell Beckham's healthy, it doesn't matter. That's not the way they play to win, even if you're playing the Jets. But I do think the Browns are better than the Dolphins. Here's the problem. The Browns play the Steelers. So, I do think the Steelers trying to get their mojo after that big win are going to try. And they would like nothing more to knock the fucking Browns out of the playoffs. That game, I think it's going to be, if the Steelers try for four quarters, and now they kind of got their mojo back in the second half against the Colts, how did the Browns win that game? I get Jarvis and Peoples-Jones, some of these guys get to come back, but I don't know. I don't see it. I think that's going to be very difficult. And I think the Browns are better than the Dolphins. But I think the Dolphins, who, again, it's hard to tell, the Bills, the Steelers, playoff positioning, I do think the second seed is a lot more important than the three seed because while you don't get a bye, you get multiple home playoff games. You play the first round, you play the seven seed. In the second round, you play the lowest seed, right? Or I guess the one seed would play the lowest seed, but you play the next lowest seed. So you might play the three, you might play the four, whatever, but you get another home playoff game. So between the Bills and the Steelers, you think if you ask Sean McDermott or you ask Mike Tomlin, do you want to go on the road in round two or you want to play at home? What do you think they would say? They want to play at home. So, and that might be the game, Steelers versus the Bills. So playing at home is a big deal. I think the Bills play hard. So I think there's a decent chance the Browns and the Dolphins lose. The crazy thing about the Dolphins, watching them really closely against that Raider team, is I don't think they're that talented. They have some good players on defense. Their secondary is really good. Don't have a great pass rusher. Offensively, they got shit. They don't have a good wide receiver. I know Devontae Parker's injured. Their running backs are randos. Tua, we'll get into him a little later. Fitzpatrick's clearly better right now. Their offensive line isn't great. For them just to get to 10 wins, if they were to lose and not make the playoffs, I think you could still justify giving Brian Flores the coach of the year. For them, I'm watching that game when I thought they were going to lose, and I'm thinking to myself, just getting 9 wins with this team is an incredible accomplishment. It really is. So I think the Ravens are in. I think the Titans are going to win and win the division. I think the Colts will win. And I think between the Browns and the Dolphins, maybe both of them lose. And written down, I don't know who would. I guess the Browns would get the playoff spot then. But it's the AFC. I mean, they're going to be a 10-win team, more than likely, that does not make the playoffs. It's been the parity, the competitiveness, the depth of the AFC has been on full display really for these last couple months. Okay, let's talk about the haves and the have-nots in the NFC. And I think this is much more black and white in the NFC. Now, you could argue in the AFC, the Chiefs are going to win. So we're just, I know they haven't been that focused, but can you blame them? When they flip a switch, who's beating them? And the answer is nobody. But I think with the NFC, and really it speaks to playoff football, there are a couple non-negotiables. And that's just the way the world works. Like, I've never heard of a good restaurant that doesn't have good food. There's not a good business right now in 2020 that doesn't use technology. Like, there are just some realities of life in 2020. Like, you're not winning the Super Bowl if you don't have an elite quarterback that can make throws on third and long in the playoffs. It's just, so just start checking people off, right? And here's a reality with the NFC playoff situation. I got three teams that can win it. I have a hard time, and I was tweeting about it on, I guess it would have been Friday. It would have been Christmas, right, is when the Saints played. Like, I'm out on Drew Brees. That doesn't diminish his career, what he is as a human being. I mean, think about this. He's a Hall of Fame player, and everyone agrees he's a better person than he is a player. He changed the franchise. It's remarkable what him and Sean Payton have accomplished in 15 years. When I was growing up, the Saints were the Aints. They were awful. They were a joke. Him and Sean Payton made that place a powerhouse, made that place somewhere where you want to play, made that place prime time on Fox, Aikman calling games, Sunday night football, Monday night football. It was awesome. Their team is really good this year. When you look at the other three teams that I think have a chance to win the Super Bowl, or I mean get to the Super Bowl in the NFC, it'd be the Packers, it'd be Seattle, and it'd be Tampa. If I put one of those quarterbacks on the Saints, I think they would be the heavy favorite in the NFC. But I got Drew Brees, who's never had a great arm, but you watch that game against Minnesota, whose defense is a joke. He has a pop gun arm right now. He's throwing lollipops in the air that just float. Sometimes if a guy's wide open, he's fine. But most of the time, he could have thrown multiple picks. It's over, as it should be. He's a 40-year-old with a bad arm, who's injured, back-to-back years banged up. Like, it's just, this is the way sports happen. We've been talking about it before. Brady kind of righted the ship. But the difference with Brady, and we had been talking, unlike Brees, it was, does he fit in the offense? It wasn't like, God, his arm strength. Brady's arm's fine. It's, does the offense and him on the same page? With Brees, it's physical attributes. The problem with Peyton Manning when he fell apart, it was physical attributes. And I had someone tweet me like, you know, Peyton Manning in 2016 won the Super Bowl. You know what? I saw that Denver Bronco team for years live. I was doing Raiders post game. I saw them play. They used to joint practice against the Niners. That defense is, and the Saints have got a good defense, dramatically better. I mean, Von Miller Hall of Famer, Derek Wolfe, Malik Jackson, DeMarcus Ware, Danny Trevathan, all their corners from Aqib Talib to Roby to Chris Harris. Just a better team. Their defense was elite. Was elite. And they barely got in with Peyton. And they barely won it all with Peyton. The margin for error against Rodgers, against Tampa Bay, and against Russell Wilson is not going to be the same for them. So I'm out on the Saints. Because the other teams, the Bears, the Cardinals, the Rams, like, we're all out on them. They cannot win the NFC. So I got three teams. The Saints could win the NFC, but Drew Brees is not good enough. He's old. He's banged up. His arm doesn't work. It's just, it's over. I get Kamara scored 15 touchdowns on Christmas. Like, I just don't view them as a team that can win the NFC. Not with that Drew Brees. Clearly, Taysom Hill is not, like, as smart as Drew in terms of manipulating the defense, but he has a way better arm. They're just kind of stuck in no man's land. Probably win a playoff game, maybe, but I can't see them winning multiple playoff games with that version of Drew Brees. Especially if they have to go outside at Seattle, at Green Bay. No, selling stock. So my three teams, and I think we'd all agree here, the Green Bay Packers right now are the best team in the NFC. Their offense is elite. The Kyle Shanahan, it's really Mike Shanahan's offense, which LaFleur runs, which McVay runs, which the Vikings have been running with Kirk Cousins, which, you know, Arthur Smith runs parts of it with the zone run scheme. But the true offense, which the Packers, the Rams, and the Niners truly run, and Cousins and the Vikings have run the last couple years, is unstoppable with a guy this good. Because we've seen good players in this offense, right? Jared Goff, when he was better a couple years ago, Jimmy Garoppolo in 2019, Matt Schaub, Cousins, and it's gone well. Goff got to a Super Bowl, Jimmy got to a Super Bowl, Schaub in that offense with Houston was putting up a lot of points. Matt Ryan is the best of that group, won an MVP, got to a Super Bowl. We have never, ever seen a guy like Aaron Rodgers. It's a cheat code. It is a cheat code. When you can run the ball like that and get the play-action boots that are just going to be wide open. And then he also gets to integrate some of the plays that he's always run. But the base of that offense is the Shanahan offense, and Aaron Rodgers has embraced it, and they've kicked the shit out of people. They score plays in the sun, in the rain, in the snow. It don't matter.
because they got the best wide receiver in the league. They have a dominant run game. Why? Because the run scheme works. And they have one of the best quarterbacks ever. So to me, if their defense plays well, and I have a buddy in the league that has advanced scout them several times over the, you know, the decade. And it's just people talk a lot of crap about their defense, but they do have individual freak players. Like, he's like Jair Alexander, baller. Savage, the young safety, coming on, baller. Za'Darius Smith, 55, baller. Kenny Clark, baller. So yeah, their linebacking play is not great. They have four premium players on defense out of the 11. And two of them are DBs that can pick the ball off, that cover guys that can make plays, and the others are pass rushers. Definitely 55 is. So it's like, they're coming on. They, to me, are the clear favorite. Mainly because of the offense. If they're winning games in the snow, it's a wrap, it's over. Then would be Seattle. Now, has their defense benefited a little? They played the Jets. They played a crappy Niners team like a month ago. They played Goff with a broken finger. You know, I don't think it's quite as good as it looked, but it's clearly not as bad as it was in the first half of the season. And we know when Seattle plays good defense, with this version of Russell, this like last half of the decade, they're an elite team. So if they play good defense, Jamal Adams has changed their team, Dunlap's helping the pass rush, and their defense just looks... One thing they always do, whether they're giving up points or not, they hit you right in the mouth. They try to knock you to the ground. That's just Pete Carroll. They are a physical defense. So if they're playing like... If they're making plays on the ball and actually getting to the quarterback and then playing like that, they're going to be really hard to beat. Russell's elite. And we know that just that franchise has a lot of equity in the playoffs. They're used to playing in playoff games. They won a playoff game last year. Now, granted, Carson Wentz got hurt, but still. And they played Green Bay a lot over the years. So if that matchup happens, that to me is very, very intriguing. And then the last team is Tampa. Because a lot like the Saints, I know the Saints have beat them twice. I just trust Brady, and they're going to have to play on the road to go to Green Bay, to go and see, like, he's played in the cold for 25 years, despite being from California. He went to Ann Arbor, spent 20 years in New England. He thrives in the cold. He lives for it. And then what do they do well? They play good defense. So if their offense can just get on the same page, and I'm not even put that much stock into the game against Detroit because that was about as gutless of an effort as you'll ever see. Detroit Lions quit. I mean, I don't use that term lightly because most guys, even when you're quitting, you might just be bad. They quit. They were over it. Maybe their team just sucks. They had coaches, like 15 coaches got corona. They had like three guys coaching. But Tampa beat the brakes off them. I just think you see, like, Tampa is a team. And the Saints would be too if I just trusted Drew Brees. I just don't. I saw it last year when he was healthier. He didn't have rib injuries. He had the finger injury and he came back from it. He got beat in the playoffs by Minnesota. How's he going to win playoff games at Seattle, at Green Bay? I don't see it. I just do not see it. But I think Tampa would be the other team that could give Seattle and give Green Bay just some problems. Obviously, they beat Green Bay, but I think you got to throw all the games. I'm just saying their personnel, their style of play, their quarterback, who is just going to be licking his lips if he goes to Green Bay and it's 10 degrees and snowing. He lived for that. I think how many snow games he's won in his career in January in Foxborough. Not an issue. So I think the hierarchy's clear. It's Green Bay, it is Seattle, and it is Tampa are my three teams that can win the NFC. I just don't have the Saints there with Drew Brees and his arm that's just shot. Okay, let's talk about a theme that we've been hammering home now for the last, couple weeks. Ever since the Jets, they've been flirting with it for a while, but now they've won multiple games. And I joked about this on my other podcast with Guy, is that, and I enjoy doing it. I like using the word. I think it's funny. And it's a fun talking point when a team's losing and there's a big-time prospect in a draft. But the word tanking and the NFL do not exist. There is no such thing. Now, you could, I wouldn't even say throw. We've seen it before with the team that is the one seed, the Napoleon Indianapolis Colts when they arrested everyone because of playoff positioning. It actually works in the opposite in the NFL. You're so good, you rest people week 16 or 17 to go into the playoffs, but the inverse is not. Like, teams are never trying to lose, no matter how terrible you are. And I was hoping the Niners would lose out to get like a top 7 pick. They beat Cliff Kingsbury, who just we'll get into here in a little bit. But tanking in the NFL, it exists in basketball. We saw it. We've seen it countless times. Tons of teams have done it. And the major difference is in football than in basketball, I think it would be more rampant in basketball if there was no lottery. The thing in football, if you have the worst record, you get the number one overall pick. Even when Sam Hinkie was doing that, how many times did he get the number one pick? Was it once with Ben Simmons? Other than that, he drafted like third a lot. He didn't get the number one pick that often. He got the third pick a lot. Now, he upped his odds. He was playing a math game. But unlike if the Jets had gone 0-16, they would have got the number one pick. If you have the worst record in the NBA, now the lottery is even crazier. It's not as conducive to getting the top pick. But back when Hinkie was doing it, is the reason they changed some of the lottery odds, you weren't 100%, you know, set in stone to get the pick. You were just guaranteed a top three pick. Now I think it's a top four pick. But in the NFL, like, you have the second worst record, you get the second pick. But that's not how coaches think, because Adam Gase does not care, right? He does not care about Trevor Lawrence. Rumors are, I heard someone told me this. I think Adam Gase has told people this. Albert Breer wrote it, that he's going to be on Bill Belichick's staff. We'll see. Belichick likes him, I guess. I don't know. Time will tell on that one. But I don't think Gase is that terrible. I was talking on social media. It would have been Sunday night, like Joe Banner, who was the president when I was with the Eagles. He tweeted something yesterday that he called Adam Gase the worst coach to ever get a second job. I said, hold up. Pump the fucking brakes there. That ain't close to true. Pat Shurmur is dramatically worse than Adam Gase. Check the records. Chip Kelly, when he got fired from Philadelphia and got his second job, the Niners, that is one of the biggest, I don't even know what to call it, just I don't give a shit seasons. I'm not even going to try seasons you'll ever see. Hugh Jackson has got the second job. He won one game in like 2 years for the Cleveland Browns. There are worse retreads than Adam Gase. If Adam Gase had a healthy roster this year, maybe win 6 or 7 games. Now, I don't think Adam Gase is that good, but he's definitely not the worst retread by a mile of all time. Pat Shurmur is dramatically worse. Chip Kelly mailed it in. Hugh Jackson stinks. Hugh Jackson's out of the league. Hugh Jackson went from a head coaching candidate that multiple teams want to getting the Cleveland Browns job to being out of the NFL. And I don't think anyone listening to this thinks that's that crazy. Now, should he be a quarterback coach or something? For sure. But he's out of the league. Part of that's probably because he's getting paid, but still. And ultimately, I compare it to dating a little bit. We love it. I love it. I love the draft. I was thinking about this today. I think I like the draft so much. It's kind of why I like the stock market. I like values on things. And different people place different values. Maneuvering your ability to buy something, and that's ultimately what you're doing with a draft pick, trading up and down to get a player, knowing what the guy's going to cost. But that's really more past like the top five. When we just think the top couple picks, especially in a good quarterback draft, we think quarterback's going 1-2, right? And I saw, listen to this guy, I'm hit or miss with him, but Florio had a really good tweet. He tweeted that for as much as hype as we put into these quarterbacks, they get drafted 1 or 2, look at 2015 and 2016. Because in 2015, Jameis went 1 and Mariota went 2. I was doing a radio show at the time, and I'd have on from Joe Klatt to Neuheisel to just people left and right that watched Marcus Mariota. Now, here's the thing. Like, I watched the league much more than a lot of these guys that follow college football. I also understand, because I talked to like scouts, the way that it's viewed a little bit differently. I think analysts in college basketball and in football, throw these comparisons. You wouldn't just walk into a draft room and say, this guy's Steve Young. And that was a name getting thrown out with Marcus Mariota. I was like, you know, Steve's like a top 8 quarterback of all time. I don't think Marcus Mariota's that. He's throwing to guys wide open. But that was just a name getting thrown around. Everyone thought Marcus Mariota was going to be really good. Jameis Winston, who had some flaws, but was a really good pocket quarterback, explosive arm. Neither one of them got extended. Neither one of them is on their original team. The next year was Goff and Wentz. That went dramatically better than Winston and Mariota. Goff and Wentz both got massive extensions after their third year. Goff led his team to a Super Bowl his third year. Wentz almost had it, I guess, the year before, an MVP-type season, and got injured. They both looked like the extensions, the Goff extension might have been a little bold, but the Wentz one made sense. Goff has been atrocious this year as one of the highest-paid players in the league. He's now hurt, and Wentz got benched. All four of those guys. One guy's injured and not good. The other guy's benched. Mariota is a backup who had actually played pretty well in the Charger game that he played. And Jameis is a $1 million backup right now, who actually isn't the backup because when Drew Brees got hurt, he maintained the backup and Taysom Hill played. So I think we got to be very, very careful. I'm saying this over and over. The Trevor Lawrence hype right now is better than he is as a player. Like, the Trevor Lawrence hype has exceeded his ability because his hype couldn't be any stronger. I think he's the most hyped player. I think he's a more hyped player, equally as hyped, than Andrew Luck. But Andrew Luck was better than Trevor Lawrence. So if their hypes are equal, like, Trevor Lawrence's hype is just out of control. So anything less for Trevor Lawrence to be like 7-8-time Pro Bowler is going to be a massive disappointment. The one thing with Luck, like, once he got to the league, playoffs, Pro Bowls. Bang, bang, boom, with Grigson and Chuck Pagano. Pro Bowl, playoff, Pro Bowl, playoff, Pro Bowl, AFC Championship game. That's what Luck did. Like, that's the hype on this guy, and I see it with Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson, someone in the league told me, he's like 6'1", 200 pounds. Justin Fields is kind of a raw product. Is someone like a Josh Allen, you know, that's going to need a little work. Not different than Josh Allen, but you know what I mean. Like, he's going to need to get to the league and just need to work. The other thing is, like, what's going to happen next year without OTAs? Are they going to exist? So we got to be very careful because there are just time and time again, we see these results. Guy gets drafted in one or two, can't miss star. And that's not typically how it turns out. Jameis Winston, so no. Mariota, hell no. Jared Goff, of course not. Carson Wentz, not giving up, but this year did not go well. That was back-to-back years, 1-2, 1-2. And two of them, the second time go around, Goff and Wentz, got historic cash. What would the Rams do to not have paid Jared Goff? What would they have do to have a do-over on that one? I'll tell you, they'd give anything. Same with Todd Gurley. So we just have to realize the draft is fantastic. I love the draft. Obsessed with the draft. I've basically made a career kind of talking about it, working in it. It's my favorite thing to talk about in football besides just the games on Sunday. The draft. College football, how guys are going to project. But most of them will not become the way we talk about them leading up to them coming to the league. They just will not. History shows us that. Most guys are not Pro Bowlers. Right? Think about in the AFC. Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are probably going to take a Pro Bowl spot for the next 6 or 7 years. So if you're going to go to the AFC, like if Josh Allen just maintains this, even Lamar kind of be right there. Like, you're not going to go to Pro Bowls. So Trevor Lawrence, like, it's going to be very difficult for him to just go to Pro Bowls, right? If Zach Wilson is on, let's say they trade Darnold and he goes on the Jets. It's why the Jets situation with Sam Darnold, I tip my hat. Remember I talked about within the last month, like, he's got to show something. He's got to draw a line in the sand. And I give him credit. He just kept swinging. Because you can't let the outside noise dictate you. You can't let previous things impact you moving forward. You have to control your own destiny as much as you can. And he's showed a lot of toughness these last couple weeks. He's shown a lot of moxie. He hasn't turned the ball over. He's thrown some touchdowns. He's made some plays. He's impressed. So, to me, he's impressed if maybe they do want one of these other quarterbacks. So, what they trade him, more teams are going to be interested in now. Say they want to keep him, whoever the new coach is. He's going to go, you know, this guy showed a lot of heart toward the end of the season. Nothing to play for beside refusing to go winless. And they started winning games and kind of dominated, right? I mean, they beat the crap out of the Rams a week ago. They shoved the Browns around. And the quarterback's playing well. And at the end of the day, he was a number 3 overall pick. So it's not like You know, he's just a mid-round guy that's kind of shown himself like the Jags have had a couple times, right? It's not one of those. It was a third pick in the draft. A guy that ultimately, and I know it's a different regime, the Jets traded up from 6 to 3 to get. From SC, highly touted prospect. Most people I know in the league loved him. Daniel Jeremiah loved him. I liked him a lot, too. And I still think there's something there. Now, it's complicated. This is not, if you want to sit at the little kid table and just talk about, well, keep him or don't keep him, you got to factor in the money. So, you know, trade him. You get a rookie guy on a four-year contract with a fifth-year option. Sam Darnold's going into his fourth year. I mean, you got to pick up his fifth-year option. I mean, he's close to a contract. If you want to sit at the big kids table and talk about football, that plays a huge role. So there are several variables in this situation. But I think we got to be careful of, like, Zach Wilson could be really good, or he could just be average. Because most guys that get drafted just turn out to be average, right? And I like Zach Wilson, but I'm just being real here. Sam Darnold, we know, is a functional NFL quarterback. And I think he has the upside to be a lot better. And he was a top pick. So the next head coach, whoever that is, and Joe Douglas, that by far is his biggest move. His then biggest move will be to decide what to do with Sam Darnold and what to do with the number two pick. But his biggest move, and it'll be the biggest move of his career, and it might not be just solely on him, that the Johnson family might have, I mean, they will have a huge role. They cut the checks. But hopefully they let him pick the coach, and they're on board with and in agreement with, could make or break his career. He gets it right. He gets his just solid guy. They're off and running. He gets an above average guy. Like, he finds the next McVay, Kyle, Sean Payton, Andy Reid, whatever, when they just first got their jobs, it'll be on like Donkey Kong. But he hires the wrong guy. He hires his, you know, Chip Kelly. He hires his, you know, I'm trying to think of guys that were good hire. Hugh Jackson was, you know, people wanted him. You make a move like that, a Cliff Kingsbury, it could send you down the wrong path fast. And if you hire a bad coach, it's a wrap, right? You hire Pat Shurmur, like, you know, it's over. If I was him, I'd just be looking to get solid. Could I get the Ron Rivera? Maybe that's Robert Saleh. Is this cycle's Ron Rivera, right? Josh McDaniel. I don't know. I don't have the right answers. You never know when the guy's hired. But the hiring for Joe Douglas and the New York Jets will make or break the franchise of his head coach. Okay, let's talk about something that I try to live my life by. And it's something that I think these, if you follow this, you'll be disappointed a lot less. Because I try to judge everyone, I've talked about this a million times on this podcast, by your actions, not your words. Your words, for the most part, mean little to me. Unless you're like my mom, my brother, girlfriend, wife, or whatever, right? Like that, any business situation, any element of life, I try to judge people on their actions, not by their words. And I think if you follow that, you won't be disappointed that often. Why? I don't get that caught up. Like, people freak out back and forth with, like, politicians, especially on Twitter. Like, everything they say doesn't ever come true. Like, I live in California, this progressive left area. They claim to love poor people. They claim to care about the middle class. I've had a front row seat. That ain't true. We lead the country in poor people. We're taking out, wiping out the middle class right now. Destroying them. But if you watch a politician go on, you know, the local news and talk about these restrictions and the state of this, you know, of the area, we got your back. We care about you. It's like, well, it's not, the actions are not adding up to reality. So your words to me, and it's like this a lot in any public job, words are often hollow. They don't actually mean anything. So I say this all the time with coaches. I don't put that much stock into most things coaches say publicly, especially about anything that's kind of on the fence. A player status, who's starting, who a coach really likes. Because I've seen and been around a lot of these guys and know people just throughout the, you know, the last decade that are saying one thing on television, and then you text people and be like, yeah, that's not true. Can't stand the guy. This guy wants to get rid of this player. Oh, he hates his quarterback. Happens all the time. So the Miami Dolphins can say whatever they want about Tua Tagovailoa. They can say they're glad they picked him, which how could they be? We all have the evidence. If they could do it over right now, they would take Justin Herbert. And they can say they really believe in him. And Brian Flores, who I commend, he has operated the Tua situation like it's 1993. You never see in modern-day football a guy like Tua consistently getting benched. That doesn't happen anymore. Honestly, it's refreshing. He's treating the player like he would any other position. But they clearly have a major red flag on Tua. Twice in the last six games, Tua has been yanked. Twice. It didn't happen once. It's happened twice. And Ryan Fitzpatrick immediately went in, and the offense was better. It's not debatable or even arguable, in my opinion right now, that Tua gives the Miami Dolphins a better chance to win. I just saw against the Oakland Raiders, or the Las Vegas Raiders, on Saturday night, every quarterback shreds them. Why? Their defense is historically terrible. I mean, awful. Every quarterback, average quarterbacks destroy them. Good quarterbacks dominate them. And rookie quarterbacks, I saw Justin Herbert kick their ass. Tua couldn't throw for over 100 yards. Had to be benched in a game against arguably, you can look at different numbers. In my opinion, they're as bad as any defense in the league. Got yanked. Could not only not move the ball, couldn't score points. Fitzpatrick goes in there, boom, start moving up and down. So the Dolphins, and listen, I don't expect them to say, listen, if we could have a do-over, adios Tua. Just like I don't expect politicians to be like, you know what? I really don't give a shit about the poor people. I just say that to get votes. They're never going to say that. Ever. And clearly the politicians actually impacts human beings. We're just talking about football here. But we are talking about the most important position in the sport of football. And that's quarterback. And they have themselves a quarterback problem. They consistently yank this guy out of the game. And then the eye test, you don't have to be Bill Walsh or Bill Parcells to go, you know, something's kind of missing. Like, I'm not really seeing it. The arm, the movement, like, it's just all kind of meh. I watched Burrow and I went, God, that passes the eye test. His team stinks past the eye test. Herbert, he actually has talent around him, shatters records. Broke the rookie quarterback touchdown record. And every game, he's liable to throw multiple touchdowns. Deep bombs, make plays with his legs, extend plays. Been a stud. I mean, the eye test, the stats test, the all-22 test, you name it. He passes them all. Tua, it's like, me sitting on my couch or me texting with my buddies in the league, we're all kind of lukewarm or red flagging it. Something's just, he had, you know, his first couple games, it looked like he was making strides, and then he takes a huge step back, and then you go, well, he doesn't have the offensive weapons, his running backs, he's got a wide receiver out. Then Fitzpatrick comes in, no big deal. Drives him right down the field, scores a touchdown, hitting dimes all over the place, pushing the ball down the field. Why? Raiders defense is horrendous. You should expose them. I'm not sure what the Dolphins do. The Texans pick, who I thought they were a lock to beat the Bengals, somehow lose that game, and now that pick's top five. I'm not saying they take a quarterback because I don't know if any quarterback beside Trevor Lawrence is a lock to be better than Tua. But you don't need, like, what the Dolphins tell you is irrelevant. Their actions are telling you everything. They don't really believe in this guy. They don't think he's good enough in certain games to win. And they consistently yank him out. And they'll never admit this, but they don't need to. We already know. If they could have a do-over, they would have taken the Oregon quarterback, not the Alabama quarterback. I think you could also say, if we all could have a do-over and the draft happened again, is he a lock to go in the top 10? I'm not saying he's like a third or fourth rounder, but is that a top 10 pick? Now, it's early, and they're limited, but Fitzpatrick, who is like the all-time bridge quarterback, doesn't seem to be limited. He figures it out well. And this is what I get back to when people keep asking me about Mac Jones. Alabama has become an all-star team. They just signed six five-star players. I think it was like an Alabama record for five different states. He is playing offensively last year, played with Najee Harris, who's going to go in the top 60 picks. Played with four wide receivers, all top 15 picks. Played with several offensive linemen that were first or second round picks. It does not get any better than that for the collegiate level. He's playing in Alabama's team in the peak of their offensive power. 7-8 years ago, defensive power. They've shifted. They are now offense. and elite on offense. When they sign a recruit at wide receiver or running back, there's a decent chance that guy's going really high in the draft. And we've seen recently those guys go and contribute and play really well in the pros. The wide receivers, the running backs, the linemen, the tight ends, the quarterback? I don't know. And I think when we evaluate Mac Jones, you got to realize that, like, is it just way easier at Alabama? Just because the guys you're playing with? If I go play a pickup game at the YMCA and I roll up and there is a team that's just running everyone off the court and they got five guys that all play Division I basketball and I did not play Division I basketball, but I roll up with four NBA players. I roll up with just NBA starters. You know what we're going to do? We're going to kick the shit out of that team with five Division I guys. And me, who is not going to be as good as one of those guys on the other team, I'm going to stay on the court for as long as my teammates want to stay on the court. Why? Because I'm on an all-star team for YMCA. Not fair. Not fair at all. Every time Tua stepped on the field, he had a better team. And I heard Michael Lombardi say this on his podcast, and it is kind of interesting. Because I was a huge, I wouldn't say hater, but I didn't see it with Jalen Hurts. I thought he was more of a running back. But when you just watch the physical gifts of Jalen Hurts on a football field, and you watch the physical gifts of Tua Tagovailoa, and remember, Tua came in for Jalen in the national championship. Jalen ultimately transferred because Bama was choosing Tua, and that was the right decision. Tua was a better pocket passer. But you watch, you can't, like, we don't care in the scouting community, stats and all that stuff. Like, your physical attributes have to translate. It's why people love Josh Allen. It's why people love Justin Herbert. It's why people like these talented physical gifts. Now, it doesn't always work. We say Christian Hackenberg. But I'm going Jalen Hurts. If I just put Jalen Hurts in his three or four games he's played and two of this season, Jalen's physical attributes are superior to Tua's. Throws a stronger ball. He moves faster. In the game, this is not 2001. This is not 1993. Pocket quarterbacks aren't... I need guys to move around. Most of my offensive linemen now in the modern-day NFL stink. Anthony Munoz and Larry Allen ain't walking through that fucking door. But all these... Every team is like multiple Fletcher Coxes. So I need my quarterback to make plays. And Tua has a really good pocket presence. But I'm watching Jalen Hurts and go, God, that guy... If I didn't know anything about the two guys, nothing... And I just, you just sat me down. I had never heard of either. And you just gave me a couple games to watch him. I'd go, I'd rather have the Jalen guy, which is crazy to say. I'm not trying to like act like I thought that 3 or 4 months ago. I didn't. But people like, I change my opinion. Football, and this is why I talk about football and the draft, like it's like the stock market. If a stock starts plummeting, you go the other way. You get away from it. Same thing with football. Guys improve. Guys get worse. And plus, college players, once they get to the league, then you can truly evaluate them. It's why I've always heard rumors that the way Belichick scouts for the draft, and maybe he needs to change this a little bit, is he like, he tries to watch old film, because then he can put them against like two-year-old film against guys that he's seen play in the league, right? So it's like, he watches, instead of watching 2020 film, he'll go back and watch 2019 film on a prospect because he knows the 2019 players that are now in the NFL, so we can kind of gauge. And I'm not saying Belichick's the perfect drafter, but the hardest part about college scouting is just not knowing how that guy's going to look in the league. You think you know, and we've been doing it, right, since the history of football. They've been playing college football, and still people swing and they miss. And I'm not saying Tua's a miss. But Jalen, just in a vacuum, if you just got the Greg Cosells of the world to just go all 22, you go, well, this guy is much more physically gifted. Not even close. So I just, the Dolphins can say whatever they want. I'm judging them on their actions. They benched him twice, and they got to be leery of him. I'm not going to try to take a victory lap, and I won't spend too much time on this, because I'm not always right. You know, when I talk about coaches and hiring, I had red flag Matt LaFleur, and he's turned out to be really good. And clearly he's a really smart guy. I mean, I've watched a lot of his press conferences. But I think the best thing he does is he runs a high-level offense. And he runs a physical offense. At the end of the day,
he wants to hit you right in the mouth with the way he plays. So does Sean McVay. So does Kyle Shanahan. It's why they can get into these games when they have injuries, when things aren't going well, and they're just involved. The game's close, right? Last year, Aaron Rodgers didn't play well, but they ran the ball well. Their running backs play well. And they can play soft teams, and they can play physical teams. It translates. I'm not a huge fan of the spread offense, like the true spread offense, what Cliff Kingsbury does. And listen, Cliff, like, you kind of are who your record says you are or your resume says you are. If you're 40 years old and I go, and you're trying to get hired, and I go, okay, hand me your resume, and you just haven't been doing anything for the last 10 years, I'd go, what's your deal? If I'm hiring a football coach, I go, oh, where you been coaching? He's like, well, I've been the head coach at a major university for the last 6 or 7 years. Oh, you win a lot of games? Oh, actually, it was under 500. That ain't good. Like, eventually, you are what your resume says. You are, as a coach, what your record says you are. So when they hired Cliff Kingsbury, and listen, I'm not anti-Cliff Kingsbury as a person. I'll say over and over. I had friends that went in that did that area when he was at Texas Tech, and they swore by him. They say he's a great guy. He's a grinder. I think when you're that good-looking, tall, skinny quarterback, we naturally think like partier. He's actually the opposite of that. I've heard stories. He's a big-time worker. Dad was a Marine. I respect Cliff Kingsbury. I despise his offense. And we saw it on Saturday when he was playing the 49ers. They were rolling out a bunch of backups, and they hit him fucking directly in the teeth, and they shoved him around, and they absolutely punked the Arizona Cardinals in a must-win game. Because ultimately, NFL football, as the season goes on, you have to be physical. You have to be able to impose your will. And that style of the way they play, that ain't it. And at the end of the day, the NFC West, for the foreseeable future, with Seattle, the Rams, and the 49ers, is going to be a grown-ass man's division. And if you're going to play this soft style, I don't know if this is true. It sounds true. McVay's never lost to him. To the Arizona Cardinals since he's been there. But Cliff Kingsbury obviously has beat him 3 times. Plays him this week. Kyle Shanahan's 3-1 against him. It's just, it's very, very difficult to win when you run a soft-ass offense. And Kyler, I think he's banged up. He's dinged up. He's just small. Small guys, you know, getting thrown around by guys 6'3", 300 pounds, you know, it's hard to play the whole season, right? We're watching Cam Newton's, he's in his early 30s and his body's given out. And he's taken a decade of pounding. Kyler's on year 2 and you already see him wearing out. So, listen, I had the Cardinals red flag from the jump. They got to 8 wins because early in the season, Kyler was magnificent. He's a fantastic talent. I love Buda Baker. Buda Baker is one of my favorite players in the league. I despise everything the Arizona Cardinals stand for, though. I don't take that offense seriously. I even watch him, I go, I don't even think this is some dynamic offensive coordinator. It feels like he's just running plays and like the leaked playbook that he thinks will work. There's not like a rhyme or reason to it. Because the night Robert Saleh was like, yeah, we know this is coming, bro. This is not going to work. We are more physical than you. We're going to hit you right in the numbers, and you're not going to be able to do anything. We're going to dominate you at the line of scrimmage, and your best asset is your quarterback running around, and you keep asking him to throw. Like, sometimes in a game, especially that magnitude, where you're playing for the playoffs, as the Cardinals are, and we're against the Niners, you got to kind of throw out the game plan once, you know, you're down by 7 points in the third quarter, and just start running the best plays possible. And their best option to win against the Niners would have had just Kyler Murray run around and run. They kept making him throw, and he couldn't really throw. The run game, they had an injury, and it just didn't work. And you hired a guy that wasn't used to winning. So now I can't be shocked when he's not getting over the hump with a team that should be in the playoffs in the NFL. And maybe they catch a break with Jared Goff out, and they're able to beat the Rams. I still think the Rams, probably the random quarterback, still beat them. I know Kyler's health's a little in doubt this week, too. But if I was betting on that game, I was just going to take the more physical team. Because I saw the Niners with C.J. Beathard kick their ass. I mean, shove them. Punk them all game long. So the Rams, who, like the Niners, are a very physical team, have a very physical defense,
actually have better players than the Niners right now on defense because of all the injuries. How do I not like the Rams in that game? They just scored 12 points against the 49ers. How are they going to score 12 points against the Rams? Now, can the Rams score 20 with this random guy from the AAF? I don't know. The Rams starter, Walford, I had never heard about him. I texted a buddy that does the SEC that I went through Wake Forest, and he's like, yeah, the guy's like your size. And then I had a buddy in the league that worked for the AAF team say he's actually a pretty good player. But we'll see. But I'm going to lead the Rams because I will never bet on soft teams, you know, in January football. That is just, that's a losing philosophy. Okay, let's hit on a couple stories really quick. One thing that made the rounds on Sunday morning was Urban Meyer. Obviously a name that I've been talking about for a while with the Chargers. Schefter and Albert Breer, and people are writing about him that, you know, teams are interested. Obviously, you know, he's one of the better coaches, college coaches of all time. It's clear he's going to have offers to coach. And Jacksonville, does that make a lot of sense? They have the number one overall pick. They have a bunch of cap space. They have some good young players. It's in Florida, so you get no state income tax. He's coached in Florida before. He's kind of a legend down there. You know, the Chargers, would they be willing to pay huge money? They have a star quarterback. He works for Fox in L.A. I just think those two jobs make a lot of sense for him if they're interested. You could say, and listen, one thing, I read Stuart Mandel, who writes for The Athletic, wrote a piece on the stress and how it got to Urban, and he's never covered in all of his years covering football a guy that's worse at losing. And you lose more in college than you do in, you know, you lose more in the pros than you do in college. I think he had like multiple 13-1 seasons at Florida, lost 9 games total at Ohio State. Like, he didn't lose a lot at Florida or at Ohio State. Here's the thing. It's way less stressful in the NFL. It's just football. In the pros, in the college, you're recruiting 24/7. Literally. Part of your stress is that loss is going to cost us recruits, especially if we lose inside our conference to Michigan, to Alabama. Obviously, he never lost to Michigan. Wisconsin, whoever. Is that guy going to go to the other program? And it got to him. And clearly, in some of these other articles I read, Mike Sando, like, listen, Urban's past, he is not squeaky clean. Aaron Hernandez was killing people on his watch. And there were rumors that, like, they covered it up. Not, I don't think he knew that he was killing people, but he knew shady shit was going down. That whole team was full of guys that were getting into a ton of trouble. He didn't care. Trying to win. Which, again, I'm pro trying to win, too. I don't look at football from a moral standpoint. But Urban makes himself out to be this moral high horse guy. And then, at Ohio State, that situation with the assistant coach. So he's got some baggage, but the owners ain't going to give a shit about that. If he wants a coach, he's going to get a job. Jacksonville or the Chargers. Right? Texans, all these teams would take him. He would just not go to the Texans. He wouldn't go to the Lions. He wouldn't go to the Falcons, I would imagine. To me, the Chargers and Jacksonville make sense for him. Now, the Jacksonville Jaguars, like, they don't have a GM. And rumors are that Trent Baalke, who's done this before, an interim GM, became the main GM. Like, I don't know. If he becomes a GM in Jacksonville, Urban ain't working with or for Trent Baalke. At least I would be floored. Trent Baalke had one of the most, I would say, public, just ugly relationship, divorces, coaching GM situations we've seen in my lifetime with Harbaugh. Telesco actually makes a lot of sense. He's really good as a general manager. The irony is that the Chargers might end up going 7-9. Does that save Anthony Lynn his job? We all know Dean Spanos loves to save a buck. But Urban Meyer, like, I don't think it's fake. But it's also not fake that two teams are in the mix. Well, what does two teams mean? It means a bidding game. They want to up the price. Everyone wants to coach, but everyone, they love their money. And that's what the agent does. You pay your agent. That's what his job is to do to get you the most amount of money. But these coaches all claim to not care about money that much. And they actually, I don't think a lot of them, like, do spend that much money like most of us would if we had unlimited amounts of money like they do. But they sure love getting those huge salaries. It's more about a respect thing. And then the other big story Monday was Dwayne Haskins was cut. And listen, I matured a lot in my
early to mid-20s, I feel like I've matured in my 30s. Like, you always should be maturing and growing. That's human nature. So, young players, they get drafted high with a lot of money. Like, he's not the first immature player. He won't be the last. I have a hard time, though, when he spent the last, really, 2 years, but the last year with Alex playing, sitting next to Alex Smith. The guy almost lost his leg. He is probably one of the highest character guys in, like, league history. He's beloved by every coach and teammate he's ever had. Like, you got to sit next to him. Just follow his fucking lead. It's not that complicated. Your head coach is battling cancer. Who, again, Rivera's one of the higher character, more respected guys in the league. And you couldn't figure it out? Like, as Coward would say, like, that's a you problem. Like, that's on Dwayne Haskins. You're not good. As Doc Rivers said, the moment your problems outweigh your play, you're gone. If your play outweighs your problems, you're okay. Dwayne Haskins' play is atrocious. He's an awful football player. And he's just a pain in their ass. Nothing crazy. But you don't usually see a guy drafted 15th in the draft within 2 years. He didn't even finish his second season cut. And not because he killed someone, not because he got caught with cocaine, not because he hit his girlfriend, not like the legitimate, not because he had a mugshot for doing those things. Just because they couldn't stand him. They didn't want to look at him anymore. They thought he was kind of a clown. An immature clown who's clearly not that good. I'll never say a guy's career's over, but his career's in major trouble. Okay, let's bang out a couple of Middlecoff mailbags. At John Middlecoff, Instagram handle. Y'all know the drill. If you don't, just shoot me a DM and I'll read your question here. Sean from Sean. Hi, John. Love the pod. I think an under-discussed part of penalties in the NFL are first downs they result in. Graphics on TV always show penalty yardage, but rarely first downs. As the rules evolve to favor the offense, and it becomes more difficult to play defense, do you think the league will review automatic first downs by penalty? Nothing is worse than getting a team on 3rd and 17, and then getting popped for a defensive hold or illegal hands of the face, 5-yard penalty, automatic first down. I tend to agree. I despise, I think pass interference, you know, on some of the, there was a play in the Raider game where he got like 60 yards. It wouldn't bother me if you just went 15 yards and you just gave an automatic first down on that. But I'm with you. I've never been a big fan of defensive holding being an automatic first down. It's 3rd and 12 and I get a 5-yard holding penalty and it's automatic first down. I'm with you. Clearly, I don't think the competition committee is in the mood to change it. I don't know if head coaches will change it because they'll always go, well, what if we're on the other side of the first down? But there should definitely be a new statistic. How many of these penalties resulted in first downs? That's a great point. I never thought about that. Even though I do think of, I hate defensive holding. I hate 60-yard pass interferences. But it doesn't feel like it's going to change anytime soon. Maybe a dumb mailbag question, but here we go. Well, I'll judge if it's dumb or not. They say there aren't any dumb questions, just dumb people. I struggle with insomnia, and every week there's a restless night or two followed by a day of inefficiency. Take Ambien. This got me thinking of how often we see players have inexplicably bad games, whether it's players dropping passes, tripping over their feet, making bonehead throws. To your knowledge, how often are we seeing players struggle from ailments that don't necessarily qualify for injury report, such as bad sleep, a hangover, too much spicy food, get a little the shits? And if this is something that players do deal with, would it make sense to avoid one of these players? Sit sleepy Dak Prescott for a well-rested Andy Dalton? And if players don't deal with things like sleeplessness, can you tell me what they're taking so I can get some too? Yeah, I mean, I just think we're all humans, and every guy, you know, reacts differently to alcohol. Some people get more hungover than others. Anyone can eat bad food and be messed up. Some people sleep differently than others. I know I need 8 hours of sleep. You know, you read about Tiger Woods or Kobe or Michael Jordan. Those guys don't need much sleep. You know, coaches, like I was around Andy Reid, he didn't need that much sleep. Even Pat Hill never stopped having energy. Saw Jim Harbaugh, the dude's like bouncing off the walls when he was with the Niners. So it's just, I just think some guys are wired differently than others. And I do think that the whoops and the different tracking now, especially with contact tracing, but just the bracelets they're wearing, there's technology for sleep. But there's going to be elements of, like, if you're really hungover, I don't think you would tell. You're not probably not going to be hungover on the night of a game or day of a game. But, like, you maybe have a bad practice. You're not going to tell the coach, like, you know, I had too many vodka sodas last night. Now, I do think if you had bad food and had food poisoning, you would tell people. But, you know, they deal with stuff just like we do. You're sitting at your desk or, you know, whatever your business is, your issues are their issues. We're all humans. And their issues are, you know, 27 years old and rich. So they can get into a lot. So they would do just what you would do. You know, it's not really that different. Now, there's an element of discipline, right? So if you have insomnia, you would. The thing with football, you have access to the best trainers and the best doctors. So maybe they'd, I don't know much about insomnia, but I've had sleeping issues before. Can they get you on sleeping pills? You know, can we take some Ambien? Does melatonin not strong enough, not work? So, you know, if you're eating the wrong foods, can I get you on the right diet? I just think they're constantly trying to improve. And as a player, you have this earning power for in your 20s and your 30s. You need, I think a lot of guys, the mature ones, try to maximize that. How can I put my body in the best position to make money, which is play well? Do the Bears have any realistic chance to beat the Packers, or should I pray for a Cardinals loss? I asked a buddy on the Bears, I said, do you guys got a shot? Can you beat them? He said, yes, but they're fucking good. I think that was his exact response. The Packers are really good. You know, I don't think Nagy's beat them in his 3 years there. Off the top of my head, first year he lost twice. Last year I think he lost twice, and obviously this year he lost to him earlier in the season. So it's going to be tough. They're going to need Mitch to play the best game of his career. Like, under no circumstances can Mitch make one of these bonehead red zone turnovers. He did it against the Vikings. He did it against the Jags. It didn't matter against the Jags because they blew him out, but he's not going to be able to do that. They're going to need an incredible performance by the defense. So is it a winnable game? Of course. It's the NFL. Maybe Rodgers throws a bad pick. Maybe you get a pick six. You know, you're going to need some help. You're going to need to play well. And yeah, it's just, it's winnable. But I actually think Arizona's going to lose. I feel as if most balls Goff throws are at the knees or below. Receivers are constantly reaching and can't catch the ball in stride. Lastly, if you're the Rams front office, are you sold that he is the quarterback of the future? 100% not. I think the shitty part, if you're in the Rams, McVay, a GM, a scout, a coach, you're kind of stuck with him. He's going to be on the team for the next couple years because of his money. He's just not very good. You know, I don't know the exact reason. He was better 2 years ago. He was, and I know he got hurt in that game, but he was awful all season. Balls skipping, missing guys wide open, throwing awful picks. He had a horrendous season. Awful. I know his numbers probably weren't as bad as, I mean, they weren't as bad as Wentz. But he was playing with Woods, Kupp, Everett. Like, his guys were good. Their run game's good. And his numbers consistently suck. Let's pull it up here on the old, I got a little external monitor. So I got a nice big monitor to look. And let's see Jared Goff's stat line this year. 20 touchdowns, 13 picks. His career year was, so the Super Bowl year, he was 32-12. McVay's first year, he's 28-7. Last year, he wasn't that good, 22-16. This year, 20-13. So he hasn't been very good the last 2 years. And they've had a good team. Their defense is good. Their run game's good. It's him. He's the problem. I'm a Cal guy. Not actually, I'm a Cal Poly guy, but I root for Cal football. I root for Jared Goff. But I don't think he's very good. Now that the Jags have secured the number one pick, what are your thoughts on the Steelers trying to get Gardner Minshew as Ben's backup until Ben retires? Then Minshew can start until the Steelers can get someone better. Minshew is solid and has been productive NFL quarterback. What do you think? I wouldn't be opposed to that, but I think Gardner Minshew was much better last year than he was this year. Let me pull up his stat page. I'd be lying if I said I watched a lot of Jaguar football. I did not. But Gardner was good last year. I watched a decent amount of him play last year. So in 2019, threw 21 touchdowns, 6 picks, he was good. This year, actually, statistically, 66%, 16 touchdowns, 5 picks. Yeah, he's productive. It's got to be better than the Mason Rudolphs. Yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to that. I mean, Minshew's going to play in the league for a while. He's just kind of a run-around gunslinger, good backup, high character, people like him. So yeah, I'm not... Maybe I was kind of underselling him. His numbers actually... I mean, career, he's 37 touchdowns, 11 picks. Holy shit, he's a little better than I thought. What do you think of Rosen's chances of succeeding with the Niners? San Francisco has a great system for him. It stresses the run game and could make up for his obvious lack of mobility. He has talent, and with a positive culture, Lynch Shanahan is set. I think it could be a good fit. Thoughts? Full disclosure, I'm a total Bruin homer, so I'm rooting for the guy. Yeah, I mean, he could become the backup. You know, whether they trade for Matt Stafford, whether they, you know, draft a guy and trade Jimmy, whether they keep Jimmy and he's the backup. I think Josh Rosen this offseason is going to be on the Niners, unless something weird happens in the couple weeks that he's here, and have a chance around Kyle Shanahan and to learn this offense. And yeah, I like Josh Rosen a lot coming out. Now, I've changed my tune. I don't do guys that aren't mobile. But you can get away with it a little bit in this offense. Like, the reason Jared Goff is losing is not because he's not mobile, right? It's because he's not hitting guys in their hands. Like the person said a couple emails ago, he's skipping balls. It's like he's Greg Maddux trying to work the bottom of the zone. Like, bro, throw a fucking high fastball. But he can't. Because I think when he does, the ball floats on him and then he throws interceptions. So, yeah, I'd say Josh Rosen is redeemable, if that's fair to say. Appreciate everyone listening. Have a good New Year's week. And I'll be back, I guess, later this week. I'll have to look in. Is New Year's on Friday? I think that's the case, huh? New Year's is Friday. So New Year's Eve, but it's probably not a normal New Year's Eve, not as many normal New Year's Eve parties. So maybe I'll put it out Thursday. It's kind of a weird week. We'll see. I'll be in touch, as they say. But have a good week. Adios.